We are doing chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, and the title of the chapter is the distinction between the field and the knower of the field. Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. Apparently, Anilji has done most of the work. He has done most of the hard work. He has taken you through first 18 verses, I think, right? That's where all the work is. As Pujya Gurudev would say, in first 18 verses, the entire essence of the thought process of Vedanta is explained by the Lord in a more brief and concise fashion as the central thought of Bhagavad Gita. So if we master this chapter, then that's it. We don't have to study anymore. So we'll quickly go through verse 1 through 18 to see what we have studied, just so that we can surmise and understand that that's where we are. And then we'll start with verse number 19. So in the verse number 1, by the way, there is a slight controversy over verse number 1 of this chapter. Does anyone know what that is? Verse number 1 is found in some of the versions of Bhagavad Gita, and in some it is not found. As a matter of fact, in most of those. So in verse number 2, the Lord abruptly it appears, declares that the one who knows Kshetra, the field of play, is the Kshetrajna. But then the logic would say that the Lord must have answered someone's question. Naturally, here in this particular case, question posed by Arjuna. So, this verse number 1 addresses three questions that Arjuna has asked. And so, if you read the verse itself, it says, Arjuna uvacha prakritim purusham chaiva Kshetram Kshetrajnam evacha etat veditum icchami Gnanam Gneyam Chakeshava. So Arjuna asked the Lord that he wants to know about these three pairs of entities. Number 1 is Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti, the matter. Purusha, the spirit. The second is Kshetra and Kshetrajna, the field of play and the knower of that field. And the third, Gnanam and Gneyam. So these three pairs of entities is what Arjuna wants to know from the Lord. And so in response to this question, the Lord begins his discourse with verse number 2. So in verse number 2, the Lord says, the one who knows Kshetra, one who knows what the field of play is Kshetrajna, is the knower. Simple logic, let's not beg confusion, right? Simple. Somebody who knows something is the knower. Simple. But the question here really is, who is the real knower as opposed to the apparent knower? You know, through our studies of Bhagavad Gita, we studied that there is seen and seer. And what is seen by seer. But that seer also can become seen by another seer. and that another seer can be seen for the other seer, to the point where the seer without seeing is the ultimate seer. Right? We have understood that concept, right? Does it make sense? So in that context, the kshetrajna, the knower of the field, has to be understood. And therefore, prakriti being the matter. Now, matter by very nature is inert. Matter is inert. It has no life principle of its own. It acts only when it's enlivened by the life principle, right? So, prakriti is that matter, and purusha is that spirit which enlivens it. So that's one pair. The second pair is kshetra. We just talked about that. Kshetra is the field of play. What is the field of play? All the objects of the world. All the objects of the world, which includes all the things and beings, including this BMI, is kshetra, field of play. And kshetrajna is perceiver, feeler, thinker. That is the kshetrajna. The one who perceives, one who feels, one who thinks is the kshetrajna. And the instruments or the means we use to know who is that kshetrajna is called jnanam, the third pair. Jnanam. The means used to know what that kshetrajna is called jnanam. It's called jnanam. But when that jnanam becomes your own, you know, we are professors, even though none of us might be in real life, but we are all professors. We love to lecture. We hardly ever practice. Those are called professors. Those are all professors. They profess, hardly ever practice. And so long as they keep professing, what they have is jnanam. But some sages that we have seen in our lifetime and otherwise, they actually live these values. They practice this jnanam, this knowledge in real life. And as I said once while taking a class here, values stay as values until you start practicing them in the life that you live. Then they become virtues. You become virtuous only by practicing those values, not by lecturing about them like I do. So when you practice those values, when you practice that knowledge that you've gotten, the intellectual comprehension, when that is put into practice, that becomes jnayam. See? So now Bhagavan has answered that very quickly by identifying. We need to just understand in a little more detail what the Lord is saying so that this concept is clear to us. Because one of the biggest confusions that we all have is who is the kshetrajna? That's the biggest confusion. So that jnanam needs to be gained, and then it needs to be converted to jnayam, practice, our own. So the Lord in verse number 2 says, the one who knows kshetra is the real kshetrajna. What the Lord means is that jnayam, when comes to you, you become kshetrajna. Now let us see what that is. Okay. So in verse number 3, let's step back one more time, go back to verse number 2. So we see, as we go forward, we'll see in verse 19 and 20, that the world of objects, emotions and thought, including all physical structure like body, mind and intellect, is all kshetra, it's all field of play, because it's essentially inert. But the ego, when it is enlivened by the reflected consciousness, comes to think that I am this body, I am this mind, I am this intellect, I am the doer. And that ego becomes Kshetrajna. Not in real, but that ego thinks I am the Kshetrajna. Because it is enlivened by reflected consciousness. Now we have studied that the consciousness that is all pervading, within which everything exists, is not affected by any of this. But its reflection in a medium, each one of us is a medium, and based on the combination of sattva, rajas and tamas gunas that we have, we become a clean, not so clean, or dirty as heck medium. And depending on the quality of that medium, that reflection is seen accordingly. And that ego that is enlivened by that reflected consciousness thinks accordingly. Am I making sense? So this is what we need to understand. The rest of the chapter is very simple. So that Kshetrajna is only a intermediary Kshetrajna. When the Lord says in verse number 2, the one who knows Kshetra is the real Kshetrajna, he doesn't mean this. He means the real, the one who has Gneyam, the one who has mastered the knowledge and put into practice and understood that I am not this BMI. That is the real Kshetrajna. So, moving from then to verse number 4, now, in order for us to know what is something, we have to know its characteristics, because that helps in knowing the overall nature of that thing. And then, therefore, that stays with us clearly. And therefore, when we want to interact with that, we know how to interact with that, right? If we don't know the nature of a thing that we are going to interact with, it's a problematic situation, right? So smart people learn first what is the nature of the thing that they're going to deal with, right? When we go out for interview, we read about the company, what the products are, what the services are, who's the boss, what's his reputation or her reputation, blah, 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 blah. We master that before we walk into that interview room, and then the guy throws you a question that you've never thought of. So, bingo, confusion. But normally, if you practice, or if you go through and understand the nature of a thing, it's much easier to understand what it is. So in verse number 4, the Lord enumerates or briefly discusses 6 aspects of this field of play called Kshetra. Number 1 is, what is that field? So number 1 is, what is the field? Number 2 is, what is its nature? Number 3 is, what are its modifications? Number 4 is, where has it come from? Number 5 is, what has it come out of? And number 6 is, what are its powers? So once you know this, you pretty much know how to handle with Kshetra, the field of play, which, as we said, is this entire world of things and beings. So there is a lot to know. Each of this seems like a very, very short sentence, but it is so pregnant, so profound, that each of these six statements, has to be analyzed by us and understood completely, so that we can then actually deal with these things and beings of the world. Our biggest problem is just that, isn't it? That we can't deal with this world. And that's what gives us confusion, sorrow, unhappiness, grief, anger, whatever you call it. frustrations. Because we don't understand the nature of what this world is. Once we comprehend that, no problem. So these are the six aspects of that field of play called Kshetra. Now, why would the Lord give out such list of six characteristics? Because each one of us is a sadhak. Each one of us is a sadhak. What is a sadhak? One who practices Vedanta in his life or her life. Sadhaka. One who does sadhana is sadhaka. Sadhana means practice. It's hard. And everybody has to practice at their own pace, according to their own understanding. There's no race here. Nobody's going to reach first. Nobody's going to be last. Everybody's going to reach. That's the point. And therefore, the Lord gives these six characteristics of the field of play called Kshetra, so that a sadhak, when sitting in meditation on Kshetrajna, the self, does not confuse any of this with Kshetrajna. You see? In this amazing book called Bhagavad Gita, you will see, if you study properly, that nothing is given to you haphazardly. Everything is given to you at the precise time for precise purpose, so that you can actually make use of it in your life when you practice this. So that is the reason why the Lord gives out this six characteristics. Now, in the verse number 5, the Lord glorifies this whole thing. The Lord says that songs are sung by great rishis and sages of yore about this Kshetrajna, the knower. Great rishis have sung great praises and songs. Now, why would the Lord say that? For one, so when something is praised, glorified, it arouses interest in us to look into it, to study, to benefit from it, to enjoy it. So that's the first purpose. Second purpose is, it is sung as a song in very metered fashion. Because when you are singing, you are expressing joy. So the rishis of yore that had mastered this knowledge and become realized souls, they are singing the praise of their own self, which is the self of us all, the Lord Himself. And therefore singing, because words expressed in prose fashion cannot satisfy them. There's so much inside that bursts open in the form of a song. And third, when you have something in a very metered fashion put together, it's easy to remember. Rather than prose, it's easy to remember. And if you remember it easily, then it's easy to teach because you remember it. You see, that's why our Vedas are written in very systematic, metered fashion, so that it's easy to read, easy to understand, easy to memorize, easy to teach. So there's a purpose. So that is what verse number 5 is all about. Verse number 6 and 7 now are very, very, very important. Okay. Verse number 6 and 7, the Lord gives out 24 characteristics of this field of knowledge. We can do that. So these two verses, the Lord gives out 24 characteristics. Mahabhuta, Pancha Mahabhutas, 5. Ahankara, 6. Buddhi, 7. That which is avyakta, that which is not seen but expresses, the ego. 8. Indriyani, 5 organs of perception, and five organs of action. So there is 18, and yes, and desire and aversion. Those are the two, desire and aversion. So that makes it 20. Then Ichha Dvesha Sukham Dukkham. There are four more in the verse number 7. You guys go through this, read again and again and again, make a list of 24. So in verse number 6 and 7, verses 6 and 7, 24 characteristics of the field of knowledge are given. Now, verses 8 through 12. 8 through 12. The Lord enumerates 20 qualities. 20 qualities to indicate the knower of the field. We handle Kshetra. Now we are going to handle Kshetrajna. Verses 8 through 12. The Lord enumerates 20 qualities which in their totality indicate the knower of the field, Kshetrajna. One is humility. Second is unpretentiousness. Third is modesty. Fourth is non-injury. Fifth is forgiveness. Sixth is uprightness. Seventh, and very important, is service to the teacher. Eighth is purity. Ninth is steadfastness. Tenth is self-control. 11th is absence of attachment of objects. Now remember, when you read this quality, remember that absence of attachment is not the same as detachment. Okay? Please understand. It's very, very important. That's not exactly the same. There is a very nice difference between detachment and absence of attachment. Look into this. Gurudev has explained that beautifully in the book. Everything, this list is in the book. I'm not pulling it out of somewhere else, okay? I'm not that good. So 11th is absence of attachment of objects. 12th is abandonment. Getting rid of this notion, I, small I, the individuality. What does it mean? It means that we have this amazing notion that I am by myself, and this world is otherwise, separate from me. If you look at the world as totality, how can you be different than the totality and away from it? A part, which is what we are of the world, cannot be separate and independent from the whole. Right? Does that make sense? A whole of which something is a part cannot be separate and independent from the whole. Right? Guruji has written a very nice song about an airplane that's flying, it's flying, and it's flying, and it's, but it doesn't fall off the edge of the sky. Why? Because there is no such thing. Everything is within the space. You can't say, I'm here and then space is there. No, cannot be. Everything is within the space. Nothing can be without the space. But the space is within the Lord. Brahman. Which means what? We are part and parcel of Brahman, that eternal only reality. We are not separate. We are not independent. So that is to be understood, you see. So that's why the abandonment or getting rid of the small I, the individuality, is important. Number 13 is very important. Perception of the evil of pain. Nobody likes pain. It's a terrible thing. Any kind of pain is terrible. But to keep thinking of it as the evil that bothers you gets you in a very negative mood. So you need to handle that. in a reasonable fashion. It's very well explained in the book, by the way. So please read. Okay. Number 14 is non-attachment. Non-attachment. Read about it. Again, it's not the same as detachment. So read about it, okay? Because we have already studied this. So number 15 is absence of excessive love for relations. Yes, excessive love. The Lord doesn't say you don't love your relations. You do. Because this is relative reality, we have to live with it. And you naturally love your relations. The closer they are, the more you love. Nothing wrong in that. But don't let it become so excessive that that becomes a preoccupation for you in your dealing with the rest of the world. See, that's what it is. Balanced mind is what they are talking about. Everything is good. Friends, we love each other. Relations, we love each other. But you can't be blinded by it so that it actually comes in the way of dealing with the world of things and beings otherwise. Very important. Very important. So, absence of excessive love for relations. Number 16 is very difficult. Evenness of mind in all situations. That is tough. Because we always live with me and mine, you and yours. And therefore this becomes a tough practice. But we must do that. 17th is unconditional devotion for the Lord and undivided attention to the Lord. If the Lord is one of the innumerable number of priorities that you have in a long list, nothing is going to happen to you. You're going to stay just the way you are and will not move anywhere any closer to any good thing ever. Lord has to be the only priority. Now, we're talking about those who are spiritually inclined and serious about finding out what is the real purpose in life. What am I is the real purpose. What am I is the real question that brings about all these studies. Each one of us, we are here just because of that. We want to know what am I and what is my relationship to this world. That's what brings us here. It's a very practical thing. And yet, when you go through these qualities, you realize that by practicing these qualities, you will exactly come to know what is your relationship with the world. It may not sound like that right now, but that's what it is. Undivided attention to the Lord, and then number 18 is liking for solitary places. Crowds should bother you. We love crowds. We love crowds. We love to go to parties. We love to talk about totally extraneous and absolutely useless things in life for a whole evening. And we love to do that with a lot of passion. It's not going to get us anywhere. Waste of time. Nobody's saying that you don't go and attend some of these events. Yes, you do. You pick and choose. The beautiful thing about going to a party is to stay quiet and watch. You'll see amazing things happening around you. Amazing thing. Try it. Go to a party. Just watch people. How they talk. How they do things. How they react. It's so much of fun. Amazing amount of fun. Really, that's where the real fun is. Try it, okay? Try it. My dear good friend, the world has proven that they don't ever do that. And that is why this book is needed. If everybody did that, there would be no need for any of this. That is the whole point here. Exactly. You hit it right on the head. This concept is foreign to us. This understanding is missing in us, irrespective of the culture that we belong to. Problem is the same. That is why. So, seeking out and staying in solitary places. Even the place full of a whole bunch of people can be a nice solitary place for you. You don't have to go into forest to seek out a solitary place. Being solitary is a state of mind. It's not something that's around you. So seeking out a solitary place and saying that. And the next one, which actually a logical follow-up, is aversion for crowds. And the last, which brings the jnanam, the knowledge, to gnayam, making it your own. So number 20 is living the self-knowledge and making it your own. These 20 qualities in the totality constitutes what is the real knower of the field, the kshetrajna. So we've spent considerable amount of time on verses 8 through 12. From verse number 13 to 18. The Lord is talking about what is gnayam, what is really to be known. What is really to be known? Because the one who knows this mystery is not bound by anything that happens in this world. In the midst of all this hustle and bustle and confusion and chaos, that person lives very happily, very blissfully, helping everybody to the best of his or her ability, not affected by anything. He's not indifferent. The one who knows is not indifferent. He's extremely sympathetic to others and tries his or her best to be of help to them, but is not affected by anything that happens around him or her. From chapter number 13 through 18, this is what we are going to learn. Why it doesn't affect. We learned from chapter number 1 through 6, Tvam, our nature. From 7th through 12th chapter, we learned Tat, his nature. Of course, he's not there. He's here. But we always have this amazing idea that he's there somewhere. Every time something bad happens, we look at this guy. Why me? He's not there. You should do this. Try doing that. Every time there is trouble, rather than looking up, try looking at this. Why me? We don't do that. Because we have these funny ideas that has been inculcated in our mind for centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries together. That he's somewhere there, remote, away from me. He's not. So I don't have to go out looking for my beloved. All I have to do is bend my neck a little bit. I see my beloved is there. So, verse number 13 through 18, they deal with jnanam, rather jnayam,